Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson.
And I'm Tom Sigmiller, VP of FP&A at Venice Solutions. As we trend closer to year-end, folks listening are probably starting to get ready for their year-end close process. During our episode today, we're going to talk a little bit about the pitfalls of year-end close, what works, what doesn't, and ultimately dive deeper with our guest. But before we do so, maybe I'll turn to you, Melissa, and ask, what does a year-end close look like for you?
Well, it's a process that starts early, Tom. I'd say we normally start in Q3, where we pull out the checklist, we pull out whatever we've learned or documented last year to make sure that we've covered, update it, and really create a really good project plan. I think that upfront project plan is really critical. We also lay out those schedules to figure out what are the deadlines, what are some of the key conflict areas that we're going to have. The earlier we can identify those, the better. I think also understanding vacation time, it tends to be a busy time where people are also wanting to take time off, and that can really create a squeeze. So laying out that those expectations relative to the capacity that you've got. And I think as much as possible, getting work done earlier. We tend to think, oh, that's year end. So we save too much of the work for the year end process, when in fact, anything and everything that can be done early should. Think about your accruals and your cleanup, your prepaid cleanups, basically going through all the balance sheet accounts to see if there's anything there that could be worked on or actioned early, asking for statements of account early from your vendors. So lots of preparation work that if you can just get it done and out of the way so that it's not also something you're dealing with at year end, I think is really critical. And what about you, Tom? What does that process look like from your end?
Sure. It's a really unique process to sort of be a part of from an FP&A perspective. You're maybe not directly contributing every day to it, but it is a partnership. It's a partnership with a controllership and accounting team to make sure we're providing timely feedback on what we're seeing within the business. When I think about the information loop, it's very much a circle. We cut our plans or our forecasts. The business goes and executes on those timeframes, and then we go about closing. And so there's lots of information that we can be feeding into our teams and partnering up with them on. It's also the kicking off point, or at least the completion of the planning process. The sooner that we can ultimately close the monthly results, the year-end results, the quicker we can get a feedback loop back into the business and ultimately plan for future periods. And so while FP&A isn't always deemed to be part of the year-end or financial close, we very much have an interesting or important role to play with it. And we have an active need to partner up with controllership and other folks within finance to do so.
Yeah, and I love that how you talk about that as a feedback loop, because it really is. It's an important part in a process that feeds other things. And so with that in mind, what does a successful close look like from your perspective?
Ooh, I'd say first and foremost, timeliness. You know, that is for me the pinnacle of a great period end close. We probably sit in a unique seat in FP&A where the concept of materiality holds true each and every day. And so I would probably rather have something that is materially correct and fast versus perfect and slow. And that's probably a unique perspective for a lot of accountants, but something that really resonates with us. Timeliness matters so, so much.
Yeah. And that's, it's interesting because there's often this friction that the team closing, you start looking for perfection because you don't want to end up with any audit adjustments or a summary of differences. So you're trying to avoid that. But at the same time, timeliness matters. And it really is a balancing act, I think, when as teams are thinking about, okay, where are we? What do we need? What adjustments do we need? I agree, getting things closed sooner. But again, I come back to the preparation can help you achieve both of those worlds where you may not have as many uncorrected differences if you've done things in advance to avoid them so that you can result in a quicker close. Because you can't be, the longer you're closing, the longer you're holding up that ability to budget.
And is that your pinnacle of a great close? That sort of mix between accuracy and timeliness?
Yes, I think it's an accurate close, but done according to the schedule you laid out. And so I think you lay out a timely but reasonable project plan, and then you stick to it. And to me, that's what a good close looks like. That's how you get both.
So at this point, Melissa, should we get into it with our guest?
Sounds good. Joining us today to discuss the best and the worst of financial close is Benno van Ingen, lead consultant from Finext. Benno, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Melissa. A pleasure. Thank you.
Benno, we've been discussing what the process looks like when it's done well. And before we get into some of the pitfalls of year-end close, curious if you can share with us what the process typically looks like for you.
I can share a couple of different perspectives on year-end close, actually, because I've been working for the past, 16 years as a consultant, helping customers improve on their financial processes, among others, their financial close. But prior to that, I used to work in finance myself. And so I was a finance manager for a mid-sized manufacturing company. So I've been on both sides of the desk, did a fair share of annual accounts and year-end processes myself. It's really nice to have both of those experiences. When I was involved in the process myself, let's say as in the company I used to work back in the days, I really loved the year-end close because it was sort of the high time of the year. I always had one or two weeks with good time to prepare everything because the holiday period was always a little quiet in the company. So I got to prepare all my account reconciliations and get all my stuff in order. All my checklists were ready. And then I could do the year-end close really smooth and simple. It was always a hard work, but fun times. But then I started working as a consultant and more or less in automating all these type of processes. And then I sort of discovered that it wasn't always fun and games, and that there's always quite a lot of stress, broken processes, ill-prepared teams up for the job. And that gives you a really broad perspective on how you should or should not run such a process.
And it's interesting what you described there, how when it goes well, you get used to that. You take that for granted that that's what it looks like. And then when you moved into consulting, you saw another side where, you know, there was maybe lacking of preparation or time not being used the way it should. It really can go multiple ways depending on how you lay it out and what are some of the work that you do in advance. Tom, how about for you? How has the process played out for you?
I'd say probably a tale of two cities, to be honest with you. In some instances, beautifully, it's a thing of beauty when it's orchestrated right. When it doesn't, it feels painstaking. It feels like the process that will ultimately never go away. And I probably chalk it all up. Benno talked a little bit already about being organized, being thoughtful and methodical as you go through things. So organization and communication really being the two, you know, key principles to getting it right from my perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. When I always find when a financial close is going on for more than 3 months, it feels like you're in this perpetual wheel of trying to get it closed. And I agree, organization, for me, preparation is key. The more prepared you are, the smoother it will go.
We can talk a little bit later about what it looks like or elaborate further on what it looks like when it does go right. What happens if an organization doesn't have a close that goes right? You indicated that when you join consulting, you're seeing some of the other sides of the coin. How does it show up in the organization?
If you look at it from, let's say, a business perspective, you could argue that nothing is going wrong. It's not like the factory is all being stopped or anything, or customers aren't being serviced anymore. So people outside of finance sometimes think, okay, what are you guys making such a fuss about? Huh? So we can keep on delivering goods to the customers and nothing's broken. But at the same time, people don't see the bigger picture, that when you don't have your financial process in order, you could give your stakeholders, the owners of the company or the people financing the company, the impression that you are not in control of the company at all. And that's the major issue why there is a lot of stress and there's a great importance of reporting timely and effectively, because it makes you as a company look credible to the people who are actually, financing the business. And then, of course, but I think that's a point that you will touch upon later. It's also that your actuals, the actual data you're reporting over the past periods, is the starting point of your planning and your forecasting. So as long as you don't close your books properly, you cannot make a sensible forecast or a sensible prediction of the time that lays ahead.
As you talk about it not impacting operations of the business. I sort of find myself reflecting on one time in my career that I was doing audit, and we had this company that was reliant on financing. And clearly, if you have a going concern issue within an organization, they can't continue to lend to you. You know, it's a breach of covenant. And this particular organization was delaying or reshaping their financial close for an additional year. Because if you take a technical read on things, if you operate a year later, then theoretically a year into the future, there's no going concern issue. And so it's interesting as we think about the organization believing that our finance org or what we do doesn't actually have an impact on the rest of the organization, when in reality, this was perhaps the most important thing that was happening at the entire company at the time, and the rest of the organization was blissfully unaware of what was occurring within finance and the downstream effects on customers and ability to deliver. If that goes, everything else does ultimately in an instant.
Yeah, I'm reminded of a time similarly, Tom, where it was a statutory audit. And so sometimes the statutory closes and audits don't get taken quite as seriously as maybe the parent company one. And yet we came to find out in a time where we were late on delivering the reports, that that was actually going to mean that we couldn't be quoting customer contracts or future customer business. And so it can become operational impacting when suddenly you can't quote new contracts, or that you get a blemish on your record, especially in some countries where these things are posted publicly, where people can see that it wasn't on time, to your point, Benno, about how that reflects on management. And so it's important not to take these things for granted, because they can quickly have real operational impact. So knowing that we're all trying to avoid a situation like that, maybe let's talk, Benno, what are some of the things that you've seen that can sometimes trip up teams in the 11th hour that can cause things to go less than ideally?
Every issue or incident that you run into during a month-end close or a year-end close, it's quite likely that in hindsight you will always say, oh yeah, I could have known that, or I should have known that. There's hardly ever really a price. The big issue is the time constraint that you have to deal with any issues or setbacks. So an event occurs, something. I remember I have a customer who had a major investment in another listed company. And the other listed company had to publish their results just a couple of days earlier than the reporting company did. They had to know what was the value of the investment in the books that were published a couple of days earlier, and had to process those adjustments in their own books. And that had a really significant material impact on the balance sheet and on the P&L of the reporting company. And so they had to wait for the data to be published. Then they had to request to that company where they had a small stake in details about that investment. They had to process that in their own books, and make sure that in every, not only in the balance sheet and in the P&L, but in every disclosure and in every note of the annual report, then reflected that last minute change. And they only had like half a day to take care of that. And that's, an example of things that they happen last minute, and events can have an impact all across your annual accounts. And the biggest threat that you have is that you are not consistent. And you know it's coming, but you have to adjust 7 tables, 2 notes, and 3 words or figures in your narrative or in your disclosures. And you're at risk of forgetting 1 or 2. That's, I think, the biggest issue. How do you know that you're complete? And how do you give yourself the time to check if your data is right?
Those disclosures, often, even though you know they're coming, there's things you could have done in advance, they do seem to creep up and be that thing that people are scrambling, and it becomes risky in that time if that's the waters you find yourself in. Because you're right, one little thing, one little word change can impact a whole bunch of other things and can result in late or errors, which you want to avoid at all costs, for sure.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the intelligent platform for complete planning. Vena's award-winning platform makes financial and operational planning more efficient, unlocks performance, and increases financial intelligence across the business, so finance teams and business leaders can plan for anything. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Benno, we're talking about time constraints, clearly a major challenge in the year-end close process. What can teams do ultimately to try to avoid some of those pitfalls or ultimately overcome that time crunch that they're going to face in the process?
One of the things I think can be really, really helpful is to make sure that everybody's prepared and knows what is expected of them in the process. And typically you see there's a Google sheet or an Excel sheet somewhere on Teams with the whole reporting calendar, with all the activities that have to be done and somebody, you know, updating the status of that. And that I think it exists in every company. What I found is a really effective way, and it sounds really simple, and it actually is, but effective way to deal with that is start working with like workflows. So rather than having like a passive list of activities that people have to check to see what is expected of them, bring it to them. And you can use, you know, there's dedicated software for that. But if you have a decent FP&A solution such as Venna, you can easily use its own workflow. It's there. I've used it at multiple customers to facilitate just checks and balances in the close process. Just give them a notification. Okay, we're 4 days before deadline, you have to do this and this and this activity now. And then we're 3 days before the deadline, you have to do this activity now. And just bring it to the people and make sure that you always have an up-to-date status of where you are in the process.
Melissa and I were having a conversation this morning about the effectiveness of push versus pull. And so funny that you bring that up. You know, ultimately push it into the hands of the users, push it into the hands of the people that you need to take activity versus waiting for them to go to this static spreadsheet, pick it up, and hope that they're going to do so in a timely basis. Great recommendation.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about technology on the show and the impact that it has on our daily workflows. Now, maybe, Benno, can you share with us, are there any legacy systems or that you see or processes that you think hamper the close process?
In a typical close process, it kind of depends on the company, but it's very well possible that there's a lot of systems involved in that closing process. You can have multiple subsidiaries running multiple GL or ERP systems, each having their own closing activities that have to be done every month. And then there's, of course, the reporting process or the consolidation or the reporting process to a parent company. And I think in both of these systems, you will see that, let's say, legacy systems, all the systems do not have the capabilities to provide an instant insight on the status of those processes to the people who are running the process. The status trackers and, again, workflows and those type of things. And also the ability, I think, to see across multiple systems where everybody is in this closing process. That's a big shortcoming, I think, in a lot of older technologies.
Melissa, is this something that every company should be thinking about? Rationalization of technology. How do you drive more folks onto foundational systems? Try to provide less opportunity for things to fall through the cracks, less visibility. Are there ways that every company should be thinking about this?
Fewer systems, but getting things accurate on those systems definitely, I think, is important. Making sure that your data is reconciled between systems. Ideally, the less you have to reconcile, the better. But where there do become discrepancies, getting that stuff flushed out early is important because those are things that can absolutely affect the quality of your close when you're trying to figure out what's the right information. So definitely would do those things. I think a couple of other things too that I found that also help with that preparation is thinking outside of finance to the other stakeholders. It's really easy to think of this close as a finance activity, but there's other teams within the company that are going to need to help provide you data from their systems and setting those expectations early so that they understand, so that you don't find out at the 11th hour, oh, they didn't have what you needed, or somebody's on vacation even. I've seen something as simple as not really planning out vacations and setting expectations early becoming a real barrier then while you're in it and you're under a tight deadline.
With that concept of reconciliations, I always think start with reconciliations, understand how and why two systems operate differently. Is it different processes, different people? What are driving those differences? And then try to figure out, how do you get down to one source of the truth? And it really doesn't matter what that source of the truth is. You talk about needing information from other functions. That's okay, right? Not everything has to originate in the finance realm. Not everything has to be owned by finance. But understanding across the org what your one source of the truth is, what your system of record is, absolutely tantamount to getting things right. It just reduces confusion. It reduces frustration. It reduces all of that inefficiency that comes with, I'm going to call it chasing your tail across the organization. And it allows people to drive forward together in sync and in unison ultimately.
Absolutely.
Now, Benno, it's pretty clear that getting your financial close right is of the utmost importance for an organization. If you're going to try to distill it down into one piece of advice that you'd want to share for our audience, what piece of advice would you provide to them in getting it right?
Oh, that's a tricky one, especially the part where you say that it's supposed to be one piece of advice. But
okay, hit me with two or three then.
Well, one of them is make sure you're prepared. Yeah? You have the right people lined up in the process. Everybody knows what's expected of them. And we sort of touched upon that already. But preparation is half of the work, more than that probably. And also one I think is worth mentioning is celebrate your success. I think that if you work in finance and you think it's a horrible time of year, you know, closing the books, then I don't understand that. Then you're probably in the wrong side of business. I think it can be a lot of fun as an accountant. Closing the books is, I mean, it's what you do, right? Come on. And I think it's something that if you close your books early, correctly, it's something to be proud of. So go out and celebrate with the team and make sure you're even better next year.
The idea of celebrating is amazing. And funny that you kick off with getting the right people in place. Melissa and I chat an awful lot with a lot of different people on different topics. And everything always seems to come back to one thing: people, process, technology. Very much in that order, but great to hear that you have a similar take on that same topic.
Benno, thank you so much for joining us today. Now, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do have two rapid-fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready?
Absolutely.
What is the best piece of business or leadership advice that you've ever received?
I think that would have to be about people as well. It was my first CFO somewhere in the 90s. I suddenly found out he wasn't really all that good in financial accounting, in the accounting standards and all that. And I was sort of surprised because I thought he was like, you know, the master of all. And then he said, you know, I have Peter to do that. You know, the key thing about if you want to be a good financial, you have to be, you have to understand what your qualities are and what you cannot do. And you have to assemble the right team to make sure that you get a high-performing finance team. And he was an excellent business controller. He wasn't really fond of financial accounting. He hired someone to do that job. And that's something that stuck with me for ages. And focus on your own strong points. Excel in that, the best in what you're really good at and what you're passionate about. And make sure you're organizing your team, everything, where other people are better than you.
Absolutely good advice. Play to your strengths for sure. Now, what is something that you do in your personal life that helps you be your best self in your work life?
What I always do in the weekends, and also I try to do some in summers at night too, is go out on anything with two wheels. I ride a motorcycle, a mountain bike, a road bike, or whatever. And what that does is that somehow, you talk about tech in this show, I heard, but so people who used to work with Windows 95 back in the days may recognize this. It's like defragmenting your hard disk. It's do you remember that screen that it's lining all these blocks together? And that's what happens if I'm sitting on my mountain bike for 2 hours. That's something I love doing in the weekend. I like to ride alone, and then when I come back, I'm all cleaned up and good to go again.
We all need a little defragmenting from time to time, don't we?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
Benno, thank you so much for joining us for the episode today. And thanks to Tom for being my co-host joining me on this episode today. If you'd like any more information on today's topic, please visit the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcast, because you don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.